Today is Thursday, July 19th, 2001. In the fireside room this evening is a forum. Today's session number is FO-2001-09 and is titled Holden's History, the Last 40 Years. Let's listen in.
Started so we can work within the allotted time. I want to welcome you this evening. My name is Rick Dunning. I'm the curator of the museum. And as we anticipate next year's celebration of Holden's 40th anniversary, as sort of when Holden is up and running as a retreat center and programming and welcoming guests, trying to pull together materials for that from our museum collection, and this is sort of one pass through that material. A lot had to happen before Holden was ready to open and begin to welcome guests, and some of what happened in preparation for that happened in the year 1961. So really tonight's program is about what it took to get this place ready to open as the Holden Village we know, and how it went from the Howe Sound ghost town, the abandoned mining town, to ready to receive guests in the summer of 62. So we'll work through some slides, although I haven't gotten all of these photographs transferred to slide yet, so I had to make some overheads of some of our black and white images. Hopefully those will project all right with the overhead projector, and we'll sort of do a little multimedia thing here. All right, well, let's think about how we get started. And any talk about Holden Village's beginnings has to start with this young man. This is Wes Preeb. Because it was with Wes that all this process started. Remember that the Howe Sound mine closed in 1957, so that's the year the town was abandoned in the summer of 57. And it was immediately offered for sale. And Wes, who was in Alaska at the time with the Army, read about this mine for sale and had the inspiration to write a letter inquiring about it, saying that I'm interested in this mine for sale. I think it might have potential as a church camp or some kind of facility like that. What can you tell me about it? And that was the beginning point. And the mine company wrote back and said, well, it's for sale for $100,000. Wes wrote again in 1958. Same response. By this time, he was back in Seattle at Lutheran Bible Institute, a student there. He wrote again in 1960. The letter was dated April 1st, 1960, so I guess you could think about God's sense of humor beginning right there. And by this point, the mine company's efforts to sell the mine and the town had failed. And I imagine they were getting a little bit desperate to get out from under both the physical and the tax liability of this place. And after Wes's 1960 letter, he received a telegram reply, call our office. And he called the office, and the property was offered as a gift to Lutheran Bible Institute, provided they would write a letter stating its value was $100,000, even though, so that the company gets that tax benefit. They received a letter from Howe Sound in May of that year confirming that offer. And they had to try and think about what to do. The president of LBI and Wes and several other people made their first visit to Holden Village in June of 1960. That's the first time Wes saw the pool hall. And it was sort of a combination of good news, bad news. Hooray, we've just been given a mining town. Oh no, we've just been given a mining town. What do we do with it? The place had sat empty for several years. It was somewhat vandalized. Hikers came through. Things were taken from the various buildings, blankets and dishes and other kinds of things taken from the various buildings. And as a result, the place was starting to look a little bit shabby. And so there was some concern. Can we make a go of this? That was foremost in the mind of the folks from LBI. Right away, a feasibility committee was formed. And here we've got to switch to the alternate media. In the home of one of LBI's board members, Gil Berg, initially, and then here a meeting in a church facility later. And the feasibility committee started to look at, can we make this work? And Gil Berg and several members of the committee then made a visit to the village later that summer, the end of summer of 1960, and sort of the same response, although they were looking at it a little bit more carefully. What can we practically do here? And their feeling was that, for the most part, the buildings were physically in good shape, the infrastructure was in pretty good shape, although the fundamental question at that point was, where do we get electricity? Because the mine had gotten its electricity from Chelan, power lines coming all the way up the lake. But those lines were down now. So the linkage to the outside, both the power linkage and the phone linkage that was present there to the outside world, was gone now. But the feasibility committee had the strong sense that if you build it, they will come, to borrow on another quote, that this could work, that people would come here to this place if we could solve some of the basic physical problems. And one of the basic physical problems was just trying to keep it together, keep the vandals away through that time. So late in that summer, in September and October, Wes came up by himself to look after the place. He was sort of the original guardian of the place, and he was here in the autumn, though that winter of 1960, the village sat empty. But the other recommendation of the feasibility committee was that LBI clarify its position relative to how they're going to run this situation, and LBI fairly clearly didn't have the resources it would take to refurbish and run an operation like this. So negotiations began to establish a different kind of organization, and so we had the beginnings of what became Holden Village Incorporated. Now, at that point, Gil Berg was made interim director. So this is Gil, and Joe Bash and Merton Stroman and Wilton Bergstrand, some of the early figures, we'll mention some of those names again. Also, a board was formed, a board of directors. Late in 1960, in December of 60, they met for the first time. Not everybody is named here, just the front row, but again, Stimmy was the president of LBI, Merton Stroman and was involved in one of the youth organizations, Gilberg himself. Vern Rieke was named chair of the board, the original chair of the Holden Board of Directors. Gail Peck, Don Carpan, several other folks there that aren't named. That's the first board of directors. They met in December of 1960. In early 1961, in February, the articles of incorporation were finished defining Holden Village Incorporated as an independent nonprofit corporation that would become the organization that would refurbish and run Holden Village. In the spring of 1961, then the property was formally transferred from LBI to Holden Village Incorporated. And then LBI's presence was simply as another representative of the board. Now, the challenge was to find resources to refurbish this place, and so Holden Village Incorporated drew on all of the Lutheran bodies at that time, or most all the Lutheran bodies at that time, and had board representation from the youth boards, the youth representatives, the youth ministry representatives of most of those Lutheran organizations. Now remember, the early 1960s is a time of mergers in the Lutheran Church. That's just about the time the ALC was getting started. That's right as the LCA was beginning to come together as an organization. So there was a national spirit of cooperation and ecumenical spirit within the Lutheran Church. But in some ways, Holden Village was one of the original undertakings in which LCA, ALC, and Lutheran Church Missouri Synod ended up all working together to get this place up and running. And a lot of the emphasis in the minds of the early board members was that this would be a place with an emphasis on youth ministry. That was really one of the hot topics in the 1960s in the Lutheran Church, that would be a focus of renewal, a focus of excitement within the church. And this would be a place to bring young adults, to bring those that were active in youth ministry, and that would be the focus of Holden Village, at least in the minds of the early board members. And so in the summer of 1960, we switch back to the mayor picture here, sorry. It was really, beginning in 61, it was Gil Berg and Wilton Bergstrand that were together working to get this place up and running. And Berg was able to organize some early work camps in 61 and 62 to get the place cleaned up. Bergstrand took on the job of promotion and fundraising and kind of working around the country to build support for this new undertaking. And those two men then together helped to get Holden Village up and running, provided the early leadership really to get Holden Village up and running, along with Bern Rieke and the rest of the early Holden board members. So in June of 1961, a group of young adults from various places around the country met at Chelan Lutheran Church to come up for a month to begin cleaning up the village. And so they came up on the Lady of the Lake, as it was at that point, the original Lady of the Lake. Now we'll see lots of fashion statements here from those times. In 1961, this was Holden's mode of transport for luggage as well as people. The flatbed international that it's called today, the 61, it's still here, still running, still operating, but it was in 61, it was a brand new vehicle purchased to get this, to help get this place going. So everybody rode up in the back of that thing to get up the switchbacks. Just like that. That's how you came up the road. So, this is the arrival of that work camp group. They came into what was the ghost town at that point and began the cleanup process, began the refurbishing process, and we'll see several examples of that. Let's skip over some of this. This was Chalet 1 as it looks in 61, just as things were getting going. Here's what the old mine looked like, or the old mill building. It was more intact in those days, more together. There's been more snow damage, but even in 61, as these folks were coming in, there's still a salvage company working in this area, pulling out metals and machinery from the mine and from the mill. That was one of the mine company's alternate responses for not being able to sell this place. So I can see what the yards were like and the lodge porches here between 2 and 3. Just to see what it looked like, is we're gonna kind of buzz through these pretty quick. Anybody recognize that building?
Chalet 2
is not there anymore. That's the one that's gone, but that's what it looked like.
What happened?
That burned in the mid-60s. No, that was the one building we've lost. In the mining days, that was the guest house. Then all the dignitaries, the special visitors that came in to look at the mine stayed in the guest house. The big boss lived in Chalet 1, so we had easy access to him for receptions and that sort of thing.
Where did these first people sleep? Did they sleep in the building?
In the chalets, mainly. Gilbert said that when they came up in 60, late in the summer of 60, and they stayed in Chalet 1, and they had mice and rats running all over them all night long. The critters had taken over most of the buildings. And Berg said even one rat grabbed his shoe and tried to carry it off. This is the old footbridge. It was an enclosed footbridge, just slightly up the valley from where the present-day footbridge is. So here's the work campers. Early in their stay. You can always pick out Gil Berg in these photos. He always walked around with his pith helmet. That was his sort of badge of authority around here. But he was in on every project. And they got dressed up for Sunday services. So it might be in the wilderness, but you didn't have to live that way all the time. Oh, here's a better shot of the mayor of Holden at that point, Gil Berg. Bertha was the cook, and the dining hall facilities were just trashed. They were a greasy mess, so they weren't able to use the dining hall or the kitchen facilities. So she had to do all her cooking on a wood stove out behind Chalet 1.
Kettle pushers are back in style now.
They are. In May of 1961, Holden hired Reuben as a caretaker. And he stayed through 2 winters. The first winter by himself, and a couple other companions in the second winter. This was his dog, Bugger. So Reuben and Bugger were the caretakers of Holden Village in the first couple of years. But imagine the whole winter here all by yourself. This is Wilton Bergstrand and his family again. He was here with that early work camp group, both in 61 and in 62. A nurse came along so that we had a little bit of medical care for that first work group. So we had, a little fuzzy, but Gil and Wilton Bergstrand and Bertha the cook and Reuben the caretaker, and also Harold Laris, a naturalist from Pacific Lutheran University, came up. They were still offering programming even at this earliest stage for the work campers, so that they had Bible study and natural history studies and other kinds of activities in addition to their work activities. Here's their altar for their outdoor service. They sort of took some bed sheets and turned those into paraments and were able to set up facilities that way. Holden hilarity starts from day one. So they found the old Santa Claus suit down in the pool hall and had some fun with that. So here's some outside meal preparation out on the porch of Chalet 1. Getting the vegetables and stuff ready. This is what a lot of that month was. Scrubbing all of the buildings and bathrooms. There are some nasty stories of toilets that had been used without water in them and having to ship out the dried stuff that was in there and all of that yuckiness. So all the mouse droppings and all the dust that had accumulated and the dirt on the windows. Airing out the mattresses, whatever blankets were left. It's just that kind of activity that you just, basic cleaning that had to be done to get this ready for people to inhabit.
And no electricity at that time?
No electricity.
Is it a double daylight time?
Right.
In terms of the outside world, it's like sunrise and sunset.
Yeah. Yeah, they started their day at about 6 a.m. and went all day. They had to find some lumber up on the tailings piles, so they did a little salvage again of lumber for building projects. Tossing them down the sides of the tailings and getting them across the creek over into the village. More cleaning. More cleaning. Scrubbing chairs, scrubbing sinks, scrubbing walls. Everything had to be cleaned up. Just the windows. So if we think, what was Holden like 40 years ago, 1961, this was what was going on here.
Were these people from Chelan, or were they from...
No, they're from many places around the country, associated with the youth organization in the church. Here's cleaning up in the dining hall. Cleaning out the grease and stuff from the dining hall and the kitchen area and all of that stuff. They didn't finally get it totally cleaned up until the very end of their month, and so their last meal was cooked in the dining hall. A lot of brush clearing around, so here's a little lesson in crosscut saw use. They did trail clearing as well, not just work in the village, but getting the area around the village ready to go. Here they're working on a new trail to Copper Falls, so again, Gil's right in the middle of that activity. And rocks off the road. And that was another hazard after several years of abandonment. Rocks are always falling off the hillside onto the road. But if you're not there to clean them up, they tend to accumulate. So they had to walk the whole stretch of the road all the way down to Lucerne, cleaning rocks off. Sometimes they got pretty big. Sometimes they weren't so big. But all the rocks had to be cleared away. And always cleaning. It's hard to count the number of rags they went through in that time. A little more trail work here. Here. The mechanic that was along for that month. Partway through the month, finally the diesel generators arrived. So here they are coming up on the barge, still the Allen Stone. So two Caterpillar diesel generators bought from Alaska for about $5,000 and shipped down. So those were lifted off the barge and loaded onto the flatbed truck for the trip up the mountain. And in the meantime, they had constructed a concrete pad to skid these down onto. So here they're being put into place. And we don't see them sitting out now because there's a building constructed over them. But the diesel generators are still here and still function as the backup power source when the hydro plant isn't functioning properly. But they didn't have them up and running anytime during this summer, anytime during this month. They were still doing the rewiring, still getting in all the services into the buildings repaired and that sort of thing. So they had the beginnings of their electrical power. By the next summer, when these were up and running, they ran till 10 o'clock at night, and then it was lights out.
So was the original plan to just have power from these generators?
No, but they knew they needed something immediately. Again, the electricity was the biggest issue. The hydro plant was several years away from completion yet.
Mm-hmm. Did they have a water supply during this time?
Yeah, the water supply was still intact. There's a diversion dam up in Copper Creek up above the mine that was diverting water into the water tank, and that was still working through the building. So that was all intact.
Was the water pure then?
Yeah, it's very clean water to begin with. It goes through a filter system now and is treated because that's what the state requires, but it's probably some of the cleanest water you're going to run across. So yeah, treatment wasn't an issue in those days. The other thing that happened is that the chimney of the hotel had broken and collapsed, and so they had to rebuild the chimney as part of getting that building up and functioning. So they had to rig up some wooden scaffolding here to get up and then do the repair work on the chimney. It's a great view, but I'm not sure about that scaffolding. Mrs. Bergstrand sort of set up the barbershop. So here behind the chalet, she was offering haircuts. Wasn't any hot water, wasn't any bathing facilities to speak of at that point. The plumbing wasn't up and functional in any of the buildings at this stage. So here, a little cleanup outside, or for the braver ones in the creek. Finally, toward the end of that month, they got a little tiny gas-powered generator. And so they had a little bit of electricity, and they hauled some old washing machines out from the basement so they could wash some clothes. Previous to that, they just had a pot on the fire and put the clothes in it and stir them around and call them clean. But finally, they were able to do a little bit of laundry by the end of the month. Here's breakfast. 5:45 a.m. Everybody's up for breakfast. Again, outside behind Chalet 1. Coffee break. Holden tradition starts right from the beginning. But as I say, all the meals were cooked and behind the chalet there. So the village center eventually became the worship space. Yeah, still the same poppies we've got growing here. I'll look at some of the chalets up higher on the circle. I think this 9 maybe up here, 8 and 9. To say they had Bible studies daily, and they were working through especially material on John the Baptist, and on the basis of those Bible studies, they ended up calling themselves the Forerunners. That was the name they adopted, sort of preparing the way for what would come after. And those Bible studies could be at various places around the village. Here's a better look at what the mill was like when it was more intact. Mm-hmm. windows and walls more in place then. The upper part of the mill structure. At one point, one of the engineers from the mining days came up and they did get a tour of the mine. At least it's got to go in the main tunnel and into the, through most of the main tunnel. That's the debris around the portal at that point. And at that stage, most of the miners' village structures were still intact. This is one that clearly was damaged. The walls sort of splayed out. They had to have the fire system up and functioning, so hose house training was part of the activities. Got the fire hydrants, the mains going, so everybody got practice in using the hoses. Their pile of clothes at the end of the month. They just piled them up and burned them. Ceremonial burning of the dirty clothes. Here's a look at some of the buildings of the miners' village, a view we don't see today. That sharpened up just a little bit there.
Those were still there in
60? Yep. 61, 62. It was until 63 or 64 when they were knocked down. This stone wall is still standing there, but those structures behind it are all gone.
Was there any thought about keeping those buildings?
They had such a challenge trying to get these buildings cleaned up, they just couldn't deal with those. And many of those had been more damaged by snowfall through the winters. Some of them weren't as well built as the buildings here, which are pretty sturdily constructed. So there's more snow damage and just kind of too overwhelming a task to... It's a shame that some of those weren't saved, but...
Are those on Forest Service land?
Yes. Each house, when in mining days, each family rented their lot from the Forest Service, leased their lot from the Forest Service. But these buildings are also on Forest Service land. Just an after picture when the houses were gone. Here again, a before picture. The removal didn't happen in 61, but some of these after pictures are included in the slide set. So we'll just buzz through them. And they took hikes. They had some times to take some breaks for recreation, so they went up over Cloudy Pass and up onto Martin's Ridge and some of the other challenging hikes around here, even out to Image Lake. So that's a quick look at the month the forerunners were here. As I say, it was their job to get it ready, get the place cleaned up, and over the next year, there was more, just got a few more slides and photos here. Late in the time while the forerunners were here, there was a visit by folks from the Augustana Lutheran Church. They were having their national convention that summer in the area, so they came in for a day to look the place over, part of beginning to get up and running. LBI actually ran a few short seminar type things or retreat type things up here at the end of the summer of 61. But that was it in terms of the activities here. Most of the rest of what happened in that year, 40 years ago, happened behind the scenes. And again, it took leadership of a board. This is the somewhat expanded board of directors. which again was drawing on youth leadership, youth ministry leadership from all the Lutheran bodies. And that included the involvement of the man who was then heading up youth ministry in the LCMS, the Walter League, and his name was Elmer Witt. And Elmer eventually became an active member of the teaching staff here and eventually director of Holden Village. One of the youth leaders of that day was a man named Carol Hinderly. And ultimately it was Carol Hinderly that was tapped as Holden's first official director. Gilbert would never let himself take on that title, although most people refer to him as that. He always sort of treated it as interim directorship until the real leader was found. But he was so committed to getting this place up and running. The same work camp activity happened early in 1962, more cleanup work. Remember, Reuben and Bugger stayed through the winter of 61, so they were the inhabitants by themselves here in the winter of 61, while all this other activity was going on around. And then Wilton Bergstrand and others very heavily involved in fundraising. And that meant going out and meeting people, getting folks together to talk about Holden. And that was a critical part of the early development of Holden, was what happened outside in terms of getting people aware of this place, getting the financial support together in order to begin the programming in 1962, in the summer of 62. In the process of looking at some of these other pictures, I found a couple more of a fundraising event just a couple years later. The same process continued after Hinderly took over. Just want you to see these. These are kind of interesting. Look at this fundraising event. They've got this big mural of Image Lake. And didn't reproduce very well, but Glacier Peak in the background. But look at the size of that crowd. I think in Seattle, to hear about Holden and Holden's financial needs. So the process continued. Can we switch to the other slide tray? We've got just a few last slides to show.
Where was Wes during all this?
Well, after that first year, Wes began working in the Southwest in mission work on Indian reservations. And it wasn't until about 69 or 70 when he came back and sort of began his leadership as pool hall director and joke teller extraordinaire. Need a hand with that? The release button is the button closest to you on the edge. No, right in the middle on the edge. Below the slide tray, on the outside, there's a release button that lets you spin it to the zero spot. Yeah?
How did Holden get its name?
Well, the Holden Mine was named for James Henry Holden, who is the man who found the outcrop of the ore body and promoted the mine. Ultimately, he had nothing to do with getting it up and running. His family, he was dead by 1918, and his family was out of the picture. They sold the mine, so by 21, they were out of it. It was Howe Sound Incorporated was the company that ran the mine, but Holden is who it's named for. Sure, Ben, thanks. Appreciate it. Merton Strawman on the right is, again, worked with Bergstrand, was one of the youth ministry leaders that became an active supporter, an active promoter of Holden. So just a few more quick shots here. Would you see a shot of Vern Reakey? Again, longtime first Holden board president. Not quite 20 years president of the Holden board. This is Leo Bustead, who also became active member of the teaching staff on the right. So say it was Berg and Bergstrand that provided the leadership in 61 and 62. In 63, Carol Hinderly came on board as the director of Holden. Carol with his wife, Mary Hinderly. And it was really their vision of the place that shaped a lot of what we see happening here. They, not so much a youth ministry center as the early leaders had envisioned, but Carol envisioned a retreat center for all people, for especially the training of the laity, the theological training of the laity, and I think for the place to bring people here in this beautiful, isolated location, to give them the chance to talk with each other, to listen to important academic and church leaders of the time, to stimulate their imagination and to stimulate their faith. And that vision of a retreat center geared more to adults and to families really began in 63. Carol and Mary had both been active in retreat ministries in Europe, getting those up and running. So they came with a different sense of what retreat ministry would be about and saw this place and its beauty and its isolation and really began then to shape the ministry of Holden Village. Carol was director from 63 through 1977. So 13, 14 years as director, and recruited a lot of folks who became regulars on the teaching staff and were also responsible for helping to shape this place. Carol brought on board Werner Jensen as the business manager, and he stayed even beyond Carol's time. So Werner and his wife Judy here, Werner probably holds the record for longest tenure here. Back then he kind of ran the physical plant of the village, but also coordinated the staff. I mean, things have become more complicated now, so the folks we need to do the job that Werner do include the operations manager, the utilities manager, the staff coordinator, and the business manager. So we got four or five people that now have to do all the more complex things that Werner used to have under his umbrella. But in terms of the physical characteristics and the continuing refurbishing of the place through those early couple decades, Werner provided important leadership. So it's a quick look at what this place was like 40 years ago and what had to be done to get this place up and running, get it ready for the first visitors, which came in 1962. It just happens that 1962 coincided with the Seattle World's Fair, and so there were lots of people coming to the Northwest anyway, and people dropped by to see what this Holden place was like, and some of those people just kept coming and coming and told others, and we sit here now in the fruits of those early labors and continue to enjoy this place and build this place and rebuild this place and try to keep money coming in to help rebuild this place and take care of these old buildings. The job never stops and the ministry never stops, and I think we all love it in special ways.
When did Beanie come?
Early. Very early. 63 maybe. Because he was recruited very early by Bergstrand and continued to come through the Hinderly years, Beanie and Gertrude. Now, and Rudy Edmond also came first in that Seattle World's Fair year, made his first visit.
Cordy and Mary?
Yeah. I don't know when they started, but right about then, yeah.
Beanie stayed through the winter 67, 68.
Yeah. What was the water turbine installed?
I'm sorry?
The water turbine.
What
did it run?
It took a couple years to get the diversion dam built, the pipeline run down the hill, and the hydro plant constructed, but that happened through 64 or 65 in that time frame.
Do we still have one?
Yes, it's still the same functioning unit today.
Does it produce electricity?
Yes. That's what runs all our lights now. It doesn't run them so well in the wintertime, though, and that becomes one of the challenges, is how we get enough energy in the winter. Yeah.
Are any of the original forerunners still in touch with Holden?
Yes. They certainly come through on a regular basis. I guess we should ask, are any of them here tonight?
They had a gathering 10 years ago.
Now, there was a reunion 10 years ago.
And next year might be a good opportunity to have another reunion, or at least invite all the people you're in touch with back.
No.
It'd be wonderful to hear them speak and reminisce about their experiences.
Oh, certainly.
The other thing that I wanted to know is most of the buildings are the same as they were, but the building we're in, was this one remodeled?
This is the most extensively modified, because this was like the regular lodges.
Right, so this was small rooms.
Right, these were individual rooms through here.
Right. And when was that done?
Also in the 60s.
And very faithful to the original style of the buildings.
Yes.
You can't really tell that it's any different than it.
Right.
But except that knowing that this kind of a room was not built for the miners.
And 8081 is when the back addition was built. So that whole back section was added on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were there any concerns when they were acquiring the village about the tailings? Was there any like initial concerns about that?
Yeah. And I think especially Hinderly, right from the start, wanted to try and get something done. He was always pushing on the Forest Service, pushing on senators and congressmen, you know, what could we do about this?
Could you repeat the questions, please?
He wondered if there was any concern right from the start about the tailings. Mm-hmm. But it's more, at that point, a visual thing,
okay.
I think. Yeah.
Well, and the gift that the mining company gave was the buildings, the land is leased.
We're in an odd situation that they gave us the mine and the buildings, and the mine consists of what are called patented mining claims, which are private property. So Holden Village Incorporated has owned the front side of Copper Mountain as their own private property, and together with LBI has owned the mineral rights of the mine. But here we own the buildings, but have to lease the land from the Forest Service. The mining company never patented the town site. They only patented the mine claims. And that's still in a leased arrangement.
Are the tailings on leased land or on?
The tailings are on Forest Service land.
That's good.
That helped a little at certain points, yeah. Oh, that would be a whole presentation. Essentially, they've spent the last 6 or 7 years has been spent testing and monitoring and sampling to pin down what the pollution problems are that still remain. Mainly it's water pollution that's the biggest issue. Water draining through the tailings and becoming polluted. Water coming out of the mine that's also polluted. Ultimately, those water sources will have to be corralled as best as possible and the water treated before it goes into the creek properly. But right now, we don't know what that configuration will be or how extensive the modifications will be for that. That's really the stage that the federal government and the state government and the key responsible party here is the company that bought out Howe Sound. In buying out their assets, they also acquired this liability. And so they will, together with the government agencies, they will reach an agreement about what sort of remediation will be carried out here. But those negotiations are just starting in terms of what will be done here. So we don't know exactly.
Bennett, Grace and I talked to this lady here, and she has a connection to the mine itself.
We've met to talk tonight. I've met her father also, who worked here. Yeah, so.
Yeah, my father worked here as a chemist in the assay office for the mine from 1938 to 1940. This was the job that he could find during the Depression when there was no work in Tacoma.
So he came out here and just showed up and said, oh, I studied chemistry, I can do that for you. So he took the samples from, I think, from the slurry several times an hour. And that was his job here for 2 years. And he was a lifelong mountaineer and just loved it here and has been back for the miners' reunion. And when you go to the museum, those black and white pictures are ones that he took. And his book, his picture book, is in the bookstore on the rack of Holden books. It's called Holden Copper Mine. A picture book of his pictures that he took.
A lovely book indeed. Yes, sir.
If we're on Forest Service, if all the buildings are on Forest Service land, Holden found the money to buy the land as well?
No, I don't think the Forest Service would ever sell it to us. And if we ever stopped being what we are, if we ever stopped doing our retreat center business here, we'd have to take them all down and clean up after ourselves before we could truly vacate this place. That was the mine company's lease agreement, and that's implicit in our lease agreement as well. Other questions? These have been some great ones.
Were the saunas and the hot tubs and stuff here?
Nope, those have all been additions. Yeah.
Miners didn't
do a lot in the saunas, no.
When did people start staying here over the winter other than one?
The second half of the 60s, they began winter programming and a winter community, yeah. Well, as I say, we're gearing up for a big celebration next year of a 40th anniversary, and so there will be many memories and much talk of this place as part of that celebration. So we just kind of anticipate that tonight and begin the process a little bit and begin being thankful for those who came before and what they've done for us here. So thank you.